Trend number one, the lean, mean world economy. Brought to you by Walmart. Walmart's success has arguably been the most powerful driving force behind at least nine of the most significant trends shaping the 21st century. One, benign deflation, which is often called disinflation. Two, globalization. Three, offshoring. Four, domestic outsourcing. Five, the shift from a U.S. economy built on manufacturing to one based on services. Six, supply chain optimization. Seven, the decline of labor unions. Eight, rapid consolidation of the retail sector. And nine, accelerated creative destruction. Walmart's business model is deceptively simple. It sells a wide variety of products at the lowest price in any market it enters. It can sell at the lowest price because it relentlessly drives down its costs via scale-related economies. As a result, its prices are about 20% lower than its competitors' prices. This gives consumers more spending power and raises their standard of living. According to a study by the market research firm Global Insight, Walmart saves the average American household $2,300 a year. And its impact goes beyond the 176 million people who shop at its 3,900 stores each week. The Walmart phenomenon ripples throughout the entire economy, creating both positive and negative consequences for Walmart's 61,000 suppliers, its competitors, and for consumers. For consumers, the most positive implication is the rise of disinflation. For example, when Walmart sells a pair of Levi's jeans for $19.68 or an 18-ounce box of generic breakfast cereal for $1.33, it changes the perception of what Levi's jeans and cornflakes should cost, even among the people who never shop at Walmart. Consumers come to expect low prices when they buy goods at other retailers, and those competitors either have to lower their own prices, go out of business, or find another business strategy. Walmart also has much to do with the unemployment statistics and the decline of labor unions. It is the largest private sector employer in the U.S. and in the world, with 1.3 million employees in the U.S. and another 500,000 employees around the world. Walmart's workforce in the U.S. is non-unionized. The company discourages its associates from joining labor unions. Since it already provides health insurance and has a policy of open communications, most employees conclude outsiders aren't needed. As Walmart spokeswoman Beth Keck told the BBC News, "Our employees can choose whether they want to be union members or not, and overwhelmingly, they have not. Whether that's by choice or because they're afraid is hard to discern. But Walmart's employees must be aware of what happened when the employees of a Walmart store in Quebec voted to unionize in 2004. Less than a year later, the company closed the store, laying off all 190 employees. According to Charles Fishman, author of The Walmart Effect, it was the first time Walmart shuttered a store in its 11 years of doing business in Canada, where it is the country's largest retailer. Walmart explained that the union was demanding that it add 30 jobs, which would increase its payroll at the store by 15%. Considering that its profit margin is 3%, Walmart decided it was better to move to another town. What's left unstated is the implied threat. Workers can choose between having a non-union job or no job at all. By discouraging its employees from joining unions, Walmart, as the nation's largest employer, is playing an active role in the decline of American labor unions. Along with the forces of globalization and outsourcing, for which Walmart is also largely responsible, this practice has caused private sector union membership to go into a freefall. Between 1983 and 2005, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the percentage of American wage and salary workers who belong to unions plunged from 20.1% to 12.5%. That's a decline of nearly 40% in just one generation. This labor union strategy is integral to Walmart's low labor costs, which contribute to its low prices, which in turn drive its sales volume, and that volume allows it to achieve scale efficiencies and purchasing clout that lead to even lower prices in a self-reinforcing cycle. Walmart's revenues of $315 billion in 2005 placed it in second place on the 2006 Fortune 500, second only to ExxonMobil. By comparison, the revenues of all the other companies in the general merchandising category of the Fortune 500, including Target, Sears Holdings, Federated, JCPenney, Kohl's, Dollar General, Nordstrom, Dillard's, Saks, and Family Dollar, add up to just 60% of Walmart sales. This is what we mean when we say that Walmart is leading the retail consolidation trend. As it grows relentlessly, it gains a higher and higher share of total consumer spending. In response, smaller competitors either close their stores or merge them, as Sears and Kmart have done. Consider what has happened to the supermarket industry since Walmart entered the business. In 1989, Walmart had zero supercenters, the name it gives to Walmart stores that also sell groceries at discount prices. In 1990, it entered the market with 9 supercenters. Today, Walmart has expanded to 1,906 supercenters, and it continues to open an average of 16 new supercenters a month. It is now the world's leading grocery retailer. On its corporate website, Walmart claims that it has created more than 240,000 new jobs over the past 3 years in the U.S. That's the undisputed positive side of Walmart's impact on the economy. On the negative side, its role as a driving force behind retail consolidation has also destroyed jobs. For example, Winn-Dixie went bankrupt in 2005 and laid off 22,000 workers because Walmart took its customers away. If only one supermarket chain went bust, other factors might be the cause. But according to a study by Carnegie Mellon University Assistant Professor of Marketing Vishal P. Singh and his colleagues, within the past 10 years, 30 supermarket chains have gone bankrupt. Moreover, 26 of those businesses cited their inability to compete with Walmart as the reason why they failed. What this means is that nearly all of the growth in the retail sector of the economy is a direct result of one company's expansion. Of the 670,000 retail jobs created in the U.S. between 1997 and 2004, more than 70% of them were jobs at Walmart. That leaves just 27,000 net new jobs per year for all of Walmart's competitors combined. So while Walmart's workforce was growing by 67%, the rest of the American retail industry grew by a minuscule 1.3%. At the same time that Walmart was driving an unprecedented consolidation in retailing, its success has been pivotal in shifting the U.S. economy from manufacturing to services. During the 7 years from 1997 to 2004, when Walmart was adding 500,000 workers, U.S. manufacturing industry lost 3.1 million jobs. As Fishman observes, there are now more Americans working in the retail sector than in the manufacturing sector, which is unprecedented in the modern era. To understand why, you have to look at why Walmart is able to sell as many as 120,000 products per store at everyday low prices. A key to its competitive advantage is the power it can wield over its 61,000 suppliers. Because of retail consolidation, very few large product manufacturers can stay in business without Walmart as a customer. That leverage gives Walmart the clout to demand that its suppliers cut their prices not just to the bone, but to the marrow. Walmart can simply tell a supplier whose products sell for 99 cents that the retail price will now be 77 cents. Walmart can dictate what price it will pay a supplier because its business is so essential to anyone who sells products at Walmart. For example, at one point, Walmart's executives decided to sell a gallon jar of Vlasic pickles for $2.97. At that price, Vlasic was making only a few pennies per jar. Worse, selling the gallon of pickles at Walmart was destroying sales of its smaller jars at other retailers. But Vlasic had no choice. Walmart refused to sell Vlasic's other products unless it supplied the gallon jar for $2.97, and it reminded Vlasic managers that if they couldn't provide it at Walmart's price, another vendor would. According to executives of suppliers interviewed by Fishman, once Walmart has set an initial price for a product, it's common for the company to tell a supplier to cut its prices by 5% each year, so Walmart can roll back its price on a product. Faced with cutting costs year after year, some suppliers slash their R&D budgets, use cheaper materials, include fewer features, or use less packaging. Levi Strauss lowered its quality standards so it can make jeans that sell for less than $20 instead of $30. Others, like Philips Electronics and the L.R. Nelson Sprinkler Company, closed their U.S. factories, lay off their workforces, and outsource production of their products overseas. Still others, like the makers of Huffy Bicycles and Vlasic Pickles, can't survive on constantly shrinking margins and go bankrupt. In its drive to lower prices, Walmart gives its suppliers an ultimatum. Cut your costs so we can cut prices, or we'll find someone else to do it. This approach is behind the trends toward domestic outsourcing and global offshoring of manufacturing work. Increasingly, Walmart has turned to Chinese suppliers for its store brand products. The Chinese suppliers' lower labor costs give them an advantage over American companies. And, more significantly, when it continues to use American and Japanese suppliers of branded products, many of those companies can only meet Walmart's price targets by offshoring the manufacturing of their products to China, Bangladesh, and other countries where very low wages are paid to factory workers. This offshoring is a major reason why Walmart sold $18 billion worth of products made in China in 2004. That accounted for nearly 10% of all of the goods imported from China to the U.S. As a side effect, the offshoring has opened Walmart up to charges that it is responsible for the sweatshop conditions in some of the factories that produce the products it sells. As in most cases, Walmart's business model has become both a blessing and a curse. People in the worst of these third-world factories have the jobs they need, but in some cases, the working conditions and pay are so poor that the jobs aren't worth having. Walmart's response is that it enforces a code of conduct for all of its suppliers, and it even sends teams to inspect the working conditions where products are made. One reason this state of affairs exists is that Walmart is dramatically accelerating a pervasive transformation of the global economy. As in every revolution, there are winners and losers. It's the responsibility of consumers and their representatives to ensure that we reap as many benefits of the revolution as we can without totally compromising our core values. Walmart delivers what its customers want, everyday low prices. But those customers have to recognize that any company that supplies or competes against Walmart has to be able to either meet the company's standards or offer something so different that it can compete on a basis other than price. In recent years, there have been a lot of complaints about what this means for some workers and suppliers, even as the great mass of people have directly or indirectly reaped the benefits. The reality is that while Walmart's tough stance on negotiating prices has been a nightmare for many suppliers and their employees, it has been a tremendous boost for the economy. Because of the benefits of scale and technology, Walmart has almost single-handedly kept the U.S. in a prolonged period of disinflation. In fact, the company not only drives down costs for its own customers, but also for the customers of other retailers, who never shop at Walmart. Fishman illustrates this point with the example of a plastic dish for cooking bacon in the microwave oven. This simple product, called Makin' Bacon, was designed by an 8-year-old girl in 1992. Her father, John Fleck, runs the company that makes it from the basement of the family's home, outsourcing the manufacturing to a large-scale contract manufacturer in Wisconsin. Because Walmart sells millions of the dishes, Fleck's cost per unit is 50% lower than it would be if he were still selling them individually through the mail. Also, Walmart's insistence on selling the dish for $6.97 has required Fleck to keep its manufacturing costs at a minimum. This is important to all of us. Because suppliers who sell to Walmart are forced to keep their costs low, they can also sell their products at lower costs through other retailers. For example, Makin' Bacon sells for $6.99 at Target, $7.99 at Walgreens, and $11.99 at Le Gourmet Chef. Without Walmart's influence, the prices at all of those stores would be several dollars higher. That's Walmart's impact on just one product. Now consider that a typical Walmart store stocks 60,000 different products, and a Walmart Supercenter, which includes grocery items, stocks 120,000 items. From toothpaste to tires, from paper towels to plasma TVs, the prices of all 120,000 of those products are significantly lower than they would be if Walmart did not exist. And all of those prices are lower not just at Walmart, but at Walmart's competitors as well. Taken together, the impact of all of those lower prices has helped keep inflation to a minimum. Consider another way that Walmart influences the economy. In the early 1990s, the company's executives decided that the paperboard box in which every brand of deodorant was sold was a waste of packaging cost and shelf space. It asked the companies that make the deodorants to eliminate the box. And when Walmart wants something, the company gets it. Today, none of the deodorants displayed on the shelves of any retailer is boxed. As Fishman reports, Walmart allowed its suppliers to keep half the savings, at 2 cents per box, while passing on the other half of the savings to consumers. With hundreds of millions of adults in the U.S. buying deodorant 5 or 6 times a year, the savings for consumers add up to $25 to $30 million each year for the past decade. While this helps the economy, it is also good for the environment. Forests have not been cut down to make the paper for the boxes, and landfills have not been packed with a billion discarded packages each year. It seems like a perfect win-win. Walmart saves shelf space so it can increase the volume of products in its stores, consumers save money, and suppliers lower their costs. It's perfect for everyone, except the companies that made the paperboard packages for deodorants. Their sales in that product category went from 1 billion units each year to zero, almost overnight. That's just one small example of the impact that Walmart makes on consumers, businesses, and the economy. Time after time, Walmart has used creative destruction to ruthlessly drive its business. In the process, it has made it virtually impossible for nearly every other company in the world to sit on the sidelines. The impact of Walmart comes primarily from the fact that it is forcing economic change to continuously accelerate. Even without a company like Walmart, globalization and information technology would make these changes inevitable. However, having one dominant firm relentlessly driving optimization of the value chain from end to end compresses the change into a very short period of time and forces everyone else to play the game or fail. Part of the magic of the Walmart system is that it optimizes the supply chain. For example, all of the financing costs of inventory is borne by suppliers. Walmart pays for merchandise after it's rung up at the cash register. In effect, Walmart runs its business on the supplier's credit. Walmart was the first mega retailer to turn over responsibility for inventory management to its major suppliers. Procter & Gamble pioneered this arrangement when it established a team of 250 people to focus only on ensuring the success of its products in Walmart stores. Other suppliers now use the Walmart team concept. And to do this, more than 700 companies have established offices near Walmart's headquarters in Bentonville, Arkansas. But Walmart's supply chain revolution is not confined just to these 700 companies. Every one of its 61,000 suppliers can access Walmart's Retail Link sales database to track how well their products are selling, down to the level of the individual transaction. In other words, if Coca-Cola managers want to know how many cases of Diet Coke a particular Walmart store is selling during a heat wave, they can get the information instantly and decide whether to send an extra truckload. For John Fleck, the entrepreneur who sells Make and Bacon plastic microwave dishes through Walmart, Retail Link is a window into the checkout line at every Walmart store. He can see exactly how many of his dishes are being sold in each hour in each store. He can also see that the dish sells better in supercenters, where customers can buy the bacon they will cook in the dish, and that it sells better during gift-giving seasons, when people are more likely to buy 2 or more dishes at a time. Giving suppliers access to its data benefits Walmart because it shifts the responsibility for analyzing the data onto each vendor. Every company that sells products at Walmart is charged with figuring out how to maximize sales of its products on Walmart's shelves, or risk losing that shelf space to another supplier. Suppliers pay for promotions, for distributing the products to Walmart stores in the quantities per case that Walmart specifies, and for stocking the shelves with the right amount of inventory to meet the demand. Walmart is also a leader in using RFID technology to track products from the supplier's warehouse to the store shelf. Already, 300 of its suppliers track more than 3 million pallets and cases weekly with RFID tags. According to Information Week, the technology helped Walmart cut its out-of-stock products by 30% last year compared to the previous year. As practiced at Walmart, supply chain optimization often includes the integration of both offshored and domestically outsourced production into one seamless, integrated whole that includes the branded supplier, the contract producers, wherever they may be, and Walmart. As we've discussed, many suppliers have moved their manufacturing offshore to get the lower wages required to meet Walmart's demands. The companies that have not offshored have typically outsourced domestically to specialized firms that do highly automated contract manufacturing on a large-scale basis. That's what Fleck has done. He outsources the production of his microwave dishes to a factory in Wisconsin, which uses a molding machine to create and package 144 dishes an hour. When it isn't cranking out microwave dishes, the factory makes medical devices for other customers 24 hours a day. The combined trends toward offshoring and outsourcing to capital-intensive specialists have led to a shrinkage of employment in the manufacturing sector. Those people who used to work in manufacturing doing low-skilled jobs are being forced into the service sector, with many of them driving trucks, unloading pallets, or stocking shelves with the same products that they once made in U.S. factories. While this has lowered costs for consumers, it has also raised resentment among those no longer employed in high-paying manufacturing jobs. This is coupled with resentment from unions, suppliers, and competitors who all feel bullied by Walmart's power. Consequently, as Walmart's power has grown, so has the movement against Walmart. Until recently, a new store was welcomed enthusiastically by communities. But now, some cities and towns are resisting the company's efforts to locate there. According to the Chicago Tribune, San Francisco, Chicago, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, Washington, D.C., and Madison, Wisconsin have passed so-called living wage ordinances that increase the minimum wage for companies that have a certain number of employees, square footage in their stores, or annual sales. A case in point is the ordinance passed by the Chicago City Council in July 2006, which affects only stores with at least 90,000 square feet and at least $1 billion in annual sales. Employees of those big box stores will be required to pay their employees at least $9.25 per hour in wages and $1.50 in fringe benefits. By 2010, employees must be paid $10 per hour in wages and $3 in fringe benefits. Currently, the federal minimum wage is $5.15 per hour, and Illinois' state minimum wage is $6.50 an hour. Walmart had planned to build between 10 and 20 stores in Chicago, which would have created thousands of jobs for its residents, but those plans are now in doubt. On the basis of this assessment of the trends Walmart is driving, we offer the following 7 forecasts. First, Walmart will avoid the American cities where it has to pay higher wages and instead focus on expansion in smaller U.S. communities and to countries overseas. The battle to force Walmart to raise its employees' hourly wages substantially higher is one that Walmart can't afford to lose. Some simple arithmetic explains why. Walmart's net income of $11.2 billion in 2006, divided by its 1.8 million employees, equals $6,222 per employee. For a full-time hourly employee who works a typical work year of 2,000 hours, that translates to $3.11 per hour. Therefore, Walmart can't raise its hourly labor costs by $3 or more, as the living wage ordinances in Chicago and other cities would require, without surrendering all of its profits. Instead, it will build more stores in the suburbs outside of cities and continue to pursue its strategy of global expansion. Second, the backlash against Walmart will create significant opportunities for those businesses that can be perceived as the anti-Walmarts. Consider Costco, the highly successful competitor to Walmart's Sam's Club. Despite paying higher wages and benefits and locating on more expensive real estate, Costco is actually more profitable. One reason is that it appeals to people who see it as a positive alternative to Walmart. Third, Walmart's next target for improving productivity and cutting costs will be the morale of its own workforce. In the early days, Walmart relied on stock options to attract and keep highly motivated people. But those days are long gone. Walmart's annual turnover rate is now 50%. That means 650,000 Walmart employees turn in their blue vests every year. Every week, the company must hire 12,500 new employees to replace the workers who quit, before it can hire the workers it needs for its rapid growth. Fishman estimates that the company could save tens of millions of dollars in hiring costs each year if it could reduce its current turnover rate by 50%. Fourth, in a world dominated by Walmart, competitors will succeed by relying on business strategies that avoid head-to-head price competition. For example, Dollar General has carved out a low-end niche by offering everyday products at discount prices in stores that are much smaller than Walmart's, and thus more convenient to shop. A high-end business strategy used by Nordstrom is to deliver products of such superior quality that discerning customers are willing to pay a premium price. A third strategy is to offer expertise and personal service, which can attract customers who go to Walmart to save money on low-risk purchases like paper towels, but are willing to pay a higher price for riskier purchases. For example, many customers will happily pay more than Walmart's price for a lawnmower if they can get advice on choosing the right machine, plus assembly service and free delivery. Fifth, Walmart will fight back against its negative image by promoting itself as a green company. Walmart's executives can't ignore the fact that consumers' perceptions of the company are beginning to batter its profits. Fortune magazine recently reported that a survey by McKinsey & Company found that 8% of shoppers had stopped going to Walmart because of its poor reputation. The corporation has recently started focusing on improving that reputation. For example, it is now the leading seller of organic milk. It is also committed to using between 8 million and 10 million metric tons of organic cotton in its products, which can help the environment by eliminating the need to use tons of chemical pesticides. It is purchasing all of its seafood that is caught in the wild from fisheries that are certified as sustainable by an independent watchdog group. Walmart CEO Lee Scott recently announced a campaign to reduce the energy used in its stores by 30% and to double the efficiency of its vehicle fleet within 10 years. Ironically, this sudden concern for the environment may contribute directly to Walmart's overriding cost-cutting mission. For example, a recent initiative to recycle and sell plastic that used to be discarded in the stores is now adding $28 million to Walmart's profits. Sixth, Walmart and its competitors will significantly improve monitoring of offshore suppliers to minimize embarrassing revelations about sweatshop abuses of foreign workers. Currently, Walmart conducts 12,500 inspections of the thousands of factories in the 60 countries where its products are made. In 2004, it blacklisted more than 100 factories around the world because they did not live up to its code of standards. This effort will only increase as third-party scrutiny becomes more demanding. And seventh, Walmart will continue to grow rapidly in the coming decade, but that growth will slow as it encounters cultural and political barriers. In China, Walmart gave in to the government of the country where many of its products are made and allowed its 20,000 workers there to join a Chinese labor union. In Germany, Walmart bailed out of the market, selling its 85 stores to a competing firm, Metro, at a loss of $1 billion. According to analysts quoted by Business Week, Walmart failed because it tried to impose its practices in a culture that found them offensive. For example, it insisted on bagging customers' groceries, despite the fact that German shoppers don't want someone else handling their food. As it continues to expand globally, Walmart will have to face the reality that, for some customers at least, low prices are not the only things that matter.